Boker Tov, good morning everybody. Welcome all. It's nice to see everybody here. Thank you. A little bit of housekeeping. As you know, this is the recruiting season. I was away for a few weeks in November. I'll be away one more week next week, but there'll be, I'm sure, a share happening here, but I won't be here next Wednesday. But then after that, we'll be good for most of December. Be'ezrat Hashem, maybe just one again at the end, and then we're good till the summer, please God. But there will be a share next week, without doubt, but it just won't be me. But that works out fine, because today we're actually dealing with part two of something that we started last week. And I see that there are quite a lot of people here who were not here last week, and that's fine, because what I'd like to do is I'd like to start anyway. Last week was quite complex, and also I apologize again, my voice was really not up to it last week. By the end of the shift, I was almost on the floor. But thank God this week things are much clearer. So what I'd like to do maybe is start off the shift by recapping, reviewing what we saw last week, because I think that will be useful for everybody, and then take you into what I think you're going to find a fascinating analysis of six tshuvas from the late 19th and 20th century on this particular issue, which bring out all of the principles that we're going to discuss now, and I'm going to review now and show you how this applies in practice. We are dealing with the question of lifnei iver lo titen michshol, of not placing a stumbling block in front of the blind. And we saw last week that this is not a literal mitzvah, meaning there are clearly mitzvot in the Torah that prevent us from actually putting physical blocks in front of blind people. Yes, of course, that's completely prohibited. But this is not that mitzvah. This mitzvah relates, as we saw in the Gemara there, to giving bad advice. Rashi brings out from the Sifra immediately, giving bad advice to other people, putting a stumbling block in front of them when they're not clear on an issue. You, if you like, mislead them, misguide them for your own purposes. And we saw in the Rambam that the Rambam extends that also not only to giving advice, but to helping other people to do averus. If you assist or facilitate in another person doing something which is against the halakha, that is also a prohibition of lifnei iver lo titen michshol. You are allowing them, enabling them to do something which is not good for them. And it might well be, as we saw last week, that even if the avera that they're about to transgress is a rabbinic prohibition, you may still be doing lifnei iver on a Torah level, because you are helping them doing something which is not good for them. Even if you gave them bad advice, that would be lifnei iver. And then we saw that last week a few clear definitions of how lifnei iver works. And let me set them out for you again so that we can plug them into today's shiur. First, we saw that lifnei iver is restricted in a number of important ways. The Gemara says there in Avodah Zarah that lifnei iver is prohibited, but lifnei de lifnei, if it's too far up the chain, if you're doing something that will lead to something, that will lead to something, that will lead to something, maybe that's not your problem anymore. That's one issue we saw. A second issue we saw, a limitation in the Gemara, was it said there that if you remember, one of the Amoraim was selling wood, and there was a possibility that people might use it for Avodah Zarah, for idolatry purposes, and someone picked them up and said, what about lifnei iver? And they said, leave me alone. Well, they didn't actually say leave me alone, but they said, it's fine, because the vast majority of people that buy this wood are using it for heating, for cooking, and if there are a few people that use it for something else, then again, that's not something that I'm directly responsible for. That's one point we saw. But the main restriction we saw last week was as follows. The Gemara there established the principle of trei ibra denara, two sides of the river. What's two sides of the river? So we saw there, the Gemara discusses, can you give a glass of wine to a nazir? A nazir, a man or a woman, nazira, is not allowed to drink wine. So if you facilitate that, you hand over a glass of wine to them, so you are enabling them to do something that they're not allowed to do. So the Gemara there established that that's only if they have no access to wine independent of you. If they could go down the road and get wine from someone else, or pop into the wine shop and pick up a bottle on their own, then that's no longer lifnei iver. Aaron, you helping them do an avera, correct? But that's called, it has to be two sides of the river, meaning a case where you are on one side of the river, the nazir is stranded on the other side of the river, and the only source of wine that the nazir could possibly have is you handing over the wine. If their only source is you, that's a problem. But if they could get it elsewhere, that is not any more lifnei iver on a Torah level. And that's very important, Because we'll see in all of the tshuvas that we're going to see in a few minutes, that's the very first question that all of the poskim ask. You're asking me, can I enable this person to do this aveira, or whatever it is? The first question is always, well, let's see, could they do it without you? Or are you the only reason why they're doing that? That's the point number one. We then saw that even if you're quotes and quotes off the hook for lifnei iver, you turn around and say, they could get it without me. It's not my problem. We saw there were two conflicting psakim of Tosfos. There was a Tosfos in Shabbos, and there was a Tosfos in Avodah Zorah. The Tosfos in Avodah Zorah seemed to say, well, if they can get it without you, then fine. Then that's not your problem. The Tosfos was discussing there giving non-kosher food to Jews who have become apostates, who are no longer practicing Judaism, who have become Christians in the Middle Ages. Can you sell them or give them non-kosher food? And they just applied that principle. If they could get it without you, not your problem. Seems to be that. But yet Tosfos in Shabbos turned around and said, whoa, one second. Even if they can get it without you, there's a second level. There's a rabbinic level. There is a rabbinic prohibition of Messiah Yidei Ovre Aveira. Even if you're technically off the hook for Lifnei Iver, then maybe you still have a mitzvah of Tochacha, maybe you have a still mitzvah to stop people doing Averas, to not help people do Averas, which is a rabbinic level mitzvah. And therefore, Tosfos said there that you, even if you're technically off the hook for Lifnei Iver, there may still be another level that you're still liable in on a rabbinic level. And most of the poskim after that we saw, we're trying to work out, well, which way are we going to jump on this? Is there really a second level of your responsibility once Lifnei Iver doesn't apply, or isn't there? And different people tried to make different distinctions. We saw the Shach last week said, well, it depends. If the people you're dealing with are apostates or non-Jews, then you don't have this second level. If they're Jews who are keeping Torah, you do have this second level. Others said, the Degel Mervava last week said, it depends not on that, it depends if they're doing it on purpose. If they're doing it on purpose, once you're off the hook, technically for Lifnei Iver, because they could get it somewhere else, take the case of the person working on the checkout in the supermarket. And along comes Mrs. Cohen with her leg of ham, about to put it through the supermarket cashier. And you're sitting there and you're saying, Mrs. Cohen, you know, you're buying ham, I'm sorry. You know, I'm not going to help you to buy a leg of ham. So the question is Mrs. Cohen doing it willingly? Is she saying, oh my goodness, I thought that this was, the kosher beef, prime cut, whatever it was, and I didn't realize it was ham, thank you very much. Or is she saying, leave me alone, I don't care, I don't keep kosher. And there's no question she could do it somewhere else. She can just go to aisle number 6 and go through there where no one's bothered. And since she could do it somewhere else and she's doing it on purpose, then maybe you're off the hook. And then at the very end of the shiur, we saw two other interesting questions, which I'll recap and then we'll get into today's shiur. We looked at a very intriguing Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Rabbi Akiva Eiger raised the case. Remember, we talked about it right at the end of the woman who is shaving off the head of a man. A man is not allowed to shave the corners of his hair, okay? A woman is allowed to shave the corners of her hair. I'm not recommending it, but if you're a woman and you wish to shave your whole head bald with a razor, you can do that in halacha. But says the Shulchan Aruch, a woman cannot be the barber to shave a man's head. Why not? She's not in the parsha of head shaving. She can do what she likes. Livnei Iver, you are helping him to shave off his hair, and he's not allowed to do that. So the woman can't do that. Comes along Rabbi Akiva Eiger, we saw at the end of last week, and said, whoa, one second. If he shaves his own hair off, he's doing two averas. He's the shaver, and he's the shavee, as it were. He's shaving, and he's being shaved, which is two averas. If she says, no, come on, sit down, and I'll do it for you. So yes, he's doing one avera, he's having his head shaved, but she's saving him from the second, from being the shaver. So says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, one second. Of course she's helping him doing one aveira, to do one aveira, but she's actually stopping him from doing two aveiras. So how can that be Lifnei Iver? Lifnei Iver is causing people problems, not saving people from problems. So he raised that as a question of ulai. Maybe you could say this, and we'll see the post can pick this up as well. And the last point we made right at the end of the shiur last time was as follows. Is there a case to be made that you're allowed to do a little aveira, whatever that means, to help somebody do a bigger mitzvah? And we talked about the case there of the, in the Shulchan Aruch, of somebody whose daughter was Nebuch kidnapped on Shabbos by the church, and the daughter was going to be raised as a Christian. And if he breaks Shabbos now, he can get her back. But if he waits till Sunday, it's going to be too late. And the question was, even though this is not Pikuach Nefesh, because Pikuach Nefesh doesn't mean saving people's souls, It means saving people's bodies. And there's no question this girl will not be in any physical danger, but she will be in enormous spiritual danger. But you can't use pikuach nefesh. So can he save her? So actually, the Shulchan Aruch is quoting from one of the Rishonim there, the Rashba, I believe, who actually ruled in a real case. This was a real shayla that was said to him. He actually ruled that he could not save her. He actually ruled that there was no hetzer because it wasn't pikuach nefesh and he was not allowed to do that. The Shulchan Aruch ruled against this, following another psak, which is that he can save her, but the question is how? Why? Why can he save her? It's not pikuach nefesh. What enables him to break Shabbos to run and bribe the officials or whatever it is that he needs to do? And he answers that there is a principle that you are sometimes allowed to do a smaller avera in order to help somebody else from doing much, much bigger averas. In this case, the quote-unquote smaller avera was breaking Shabbos compared to an individual being brought up in a life of completely away from Torah and mitzvahs. And the Mishnah Brura explained that we saw at the end that as long as the person who was breaking the avera was not negligent in some way, you could run in there. In fact, you must run in there to help them. So again, here, are we going to be, if you like, vigilant about this and run in and do litnei iver here and litnei iver there to help other people if we think that's the right thing to do, or is that not the way that we can rationalize it? So that's in a nutshell what we said last week. All of those points will be raised in the next 45 minutes. Because I want to show you 6 tshuvas. If you look at today's sheet, please. If you look at today's sheet, you will see it's quite short. Number one, it's only 4 pages, which for me is quite miraculous. And it only has 8 sources, which some of you will be delighted to see. The bad news is that some of those sources are very long. But I've brought you here 3 tshuvas from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Actually, 2 of the boxes are from the same tshuva. One from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, one from the Netziv. The Netziv obviously lived 100 years earlier in the middle to the late 19th century, and the last one from Rav Avadi Yosef. So you see, most of those responses are coming from the modern scenario, and even the Netziv is not so long ago. So let's open up with Rav Moshe Feinstein. Look please on page 1 of today's sheet. And let's read it together. I'm not going to read every single word, but we'll read it together. Be'inyan mischa catering. One of the fun things about Rav Moshe is the way he transliterates English words. Mischa ha-catering. There's a catering company. She'alhar b'chatunot, mitnagim shaloi kshura. The many of the chasnas that he has a hall, he has a simcha hall and he caters, and many of the chasnas that he caters have chasnas with mixed dancing. That's the problem. And he's not happy, he's a frum caterer and he's renting out his hall, and people are having mixed dancing in the hall, and he says, is this my responsibility? Is there a problem that you're encouraging these people to do these averas? And this tshuva is from Tafshin Yud Ches, 1958, and it's interestingly, it's from Harav Hagon Mefurusam Reino Harav Ben Zion Rakov. Rav Ben Zion Rakov was from London, okay, and he lived in Golders Green for many years, and he is answering the tshuva to Rav Rakov. And look what he says here. I've divided the tshuva here I've numbered it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, etc. That doesn't appear in the original tshuva. I've just broken it up so that it's easier for us to get bite-sized chunks. Let's have a look. In little number one, in this big box number one. V'dova imutu la'asod mischa ha'chanat ha'chatunot, shehu la'aschir ha'ulam, you're renting out a hall, la'asod ha'suda ha'kudom, she'nikra catering, v'ashe she'bahar b'chasnes mitnagim shaloi kashuru b'rikutut ha'nashim v'nashim shehu dava aveira. Let's all be agreed that mixed dancing in these functions is prohibited in halacha. So you see he already divides into 2 questions. Is there litnei iver, which is on the Torah level? And even if there isn't litnei iver, because we'll see they can get it elsewhere, is there now the second level of masayi de obri avera? You're helping other people to do averas, which is a rabbinic prohibition. Number 2. Hine, kevan shebe'ir gedoyla ke London. In a great city like London, they can very easily rent another hall. Meaning, if you say, I'm not renting my halls out to people who have mixed dancing, is that going to stop anyone having mixed dancing? No, says Rav Moshe, they're just going to go down the road, and they're going to get a hall somewhere else. So that's the first thing. The very first thing he establishes is there is no Lifnei Hiver Midoraisa. Because everybody agrees on this principle, he says that if they can get it somewhere else, you're off the hook on Lifnei Iver. So don't worry about that, the first thing he says. Little number three, ach, but, hanidon hu, the real question here is, mishum sheyesh l'chush yishitas ha-toisvus, do we have to worry about the toisvus in Shabbos? The summary that they hold, the isum midrabonu miho ikka, that there is still a second level of drabonu, mitam, shaharichayv la'brishum mi'issa. You have to still try and stop other people doing averas. Maybe that's tochacha. We talked about this week. The eichi yisayenu b'davar avera. How can you help these people with their mixed dancing, even if you're technically off the hook with lifnei iver? Little number four. Aval ein b'shach. And he brings in the shach that we saw last week. Shemechadesh dikeven shehu mishum sheyesh chiv lafrishu me'isa. Since you have this obligation to stop people doing isurim, mutali Yisrael mumah. You would be allowed to, you wouldn't have that obligation if the Jew was an apostate, as the Tosfos says there. She'enu chayv lafrisho, there you don't have to, once there's no lifnei iver, there you don't have to think anymore. Uvezeh ayru ha-Tosfos va-Mordechai b'Avodah Zorah, that's what the Mordechai and the Tosfos are talking about in Avodah Zorah. Shematirim, they allow you to give the food, the non-kosher food to the apostate Jew. Mordechai b'Shabbos, but the other Tosfos in Shabbos, which says you can't help the Jew. She'asrihu, who be Yisrael kosher? That's with a religious Jew. There you have to help them. She'chayv lafrisho. So the first thing Rav Moshe is saying, maybe you could make an argument that the people who are doing the mixed dancing, they're not religious. And therefore, if you don't have a lifnei iver problem, because they can go to a hall down the road, since they're anyway not religious Jews, maybe you don't have any further obligation. As we said last week, though, that raises the question. Do non-religious Jews today fall into the same category as the apostate Jew of the Middle Ages? And the answer, according to most poskim, there is absolutely not. The non-religious Jew today is not religious for very different reasons why the apostate Jew was also not religious. So maybe that doesn't help us. So then he goes on a page for Degel Merbava. I'm on the third line of little number four. The Kavanas Ashach Deloid Delav Dafke B'Mumma. It's not about being an apostate. Ela De'af B'Stam Yisrael. Even with a regular Jew, Ein Metzadim La'Frisha Ela Ba'Oyle B'Shogeg. We are only obligated if they're doing it B'Shogeg. Now, what does B'Shogeg really mean? B'Shogeg. They don't know.
Unintentionally.
So let's ask now the question: a non-religious couple making a wedding, where they're having mixed dancing, and they're having the dancing, are they b'shogeg or are they b'mezid? Are they on purpose or are they by accident?
Well, they're both.
That's the problem. They're both, in a sense. Yes, sir.
But as you know, the situation of the Jewish community in London at that time,
yes,
was a lot of the Jews there were not knowledgeable.
Correct.
Were not particularly religious.
Correct.
And if you turn around to them and say, you can have, most people had a sympathy with mixed dancing.
Correct. Even people who today would never dream of such a thing, in those days have those kind of symptoms.
Also, if you could turn around to them and say, no, you can't have mixed dancing in my hall.
Yes.
They just said, okay, we'll go to a right. Goyisha
right.
hall, and we won't have a kosher
meal. Oh, we'll see. Good. Very good, very good, very good. We'll see that Rav Moshe is going to come on to that. Good. Great. I agree with you.
He said that
it's all very well saying you can't have your function in my hall, but if in London in the 1950s there's a good chance they'd go to a non-kosher hall down the road and they'd just do it down there. Rav Moshe's going to say exactly the same thing in three lines from now. So the first, he's at the moment in the point, he's got difficulty at the moment because it's very hard to say these people are apostate Jews. God forbid. It's also very hard to say that they're doing it on purpose, because they don't really know. And therefore, at the moment, everything is leading us to say that really you can't rent the hall to them because there is a mitzvah to try and stop people doing averus. They're b'shogeg. Let's just, 1 second. Avakash over b'mezid, I'm three lines up from the end of number four. Al eza avera, if they were doing it on purpose, afilo eina mumma, even if they weren't apostates, eina yisrael achay metzuva, la'frisha ayin sham. Fine. Ulechem. We have to follow this distinction of on purpose or not on purpose. The kavanasa, the chala oisib b'mezid shizofi, the kevin demashe mechayvim la'afrish because of a rosh, shehu b'mashe af l'katan, because we learn this from the idea that with a child, oichel nevelis mutsuvim la'afrish, we have to stop a child from eating non-kosher food, and that's clearly dealing with a shogeg, there we have an obligation. Fine. So at the moment, we haven't got a heter to rent out our hall to these people yet. Yes.
Should the question only be, advantage that you're paying plain user for the mixed assets.
You want to turn around and say that this is too far removed, that the band are really the people who are doing the problem. The band are making... I don't know, it's very hard to say that. It's difficult to say that. The band are just playing the music. It's everybody, really. Meaning, it's not the band that's asking the Shiloh. It could be if the band was asking the Shiloh, yes, you're right. But it's really everybody that's facilitating this wedding. It can't happen without the catering. It can't happen without the hall. It can't happen without the band. By the way, the band is a very fundamental part of the wedding. There's a Shulchan Aruch completely in parentheses. The minhag used to be to get married on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
For all sorts of reasons, it was cheaper that way, etc. The Shulchan Aruch deals with that, and they used to have the Suda on Shabbos, on Friday night. So the Shulchan Aruch Paskin said that even though the Suda is on Shabbos, you can have a live band of non-Jewish musicians playing on Shabbos on Friday night. He says, because there's no way you can have a chasna without a live band. Well, you're going to have three guys standing up there singing. So he says, I'd like you to try that one today on a Friday night. Get yourself a live band on Friday night and see what happens then. Anyway, number five. This is the point that you're raising before. Have a look at number five. And the little number five in box number one. Aval the Kanira. But he says, I'm going to give you a different angle. Ein Lasso. I don't think this is actually a problem. I don't think this is a problem, says Rav Moshe. Why? The Havadai Kushelo Yaschizeh Ta'ulam. The Misha Yukudu Ba'aveira. If you don't rent them the hall for the cost of the mixed dancing, they'll just go down the road. Exactly what you said. It says, Rav Moshe says there's a good chance they won't even go to a kosher caterer. They'll go to a non-Jewish caterer or a Jewish caterer who's not kosher. Okay, who doesn't have kosher food. And actually he says, on the contrary, by you renting them this hall, okay, you're actually stopping them. You see, he's bringing in this idea, remember the shaver, the shavi? He's bringing in this idea that you think you're harming them by helping them to do mixed dancing. Actually, you're helping them because you're protecting them from the even more serious aveira of ma'achalos asuros, of they're going to eat trade food, or aveiros of the rikud, haloi masayim ba'etzim klum. And maybe even what the gentleman said about the band, at the end of the day, you're not really making them do the mixed dancing, okay? Shagam b'loisi yohari yavru, because they'll do that either way. They'll do that with or without you. And on the contrary, by helping them to get a kosher function, you're actually doing something which is positive. So he brings in that argument. Look at number six. For gam mistava, and now he brings in another argument. The lo yasru mishum masayideh over avera. I give you another reason why it's not a problem. Surely litnei iva is where you give them something that all they can do with that thing is an aveira, meaning that the cup of wine to a nazir. What else can a nazir do with a cup of wine? Wash his hair. There's nothing he can do. All he can do is drink it. All you do with wine is to drink it. But really, when you're doing something, you're helping with something which is basically allowed. Let's face it, what are you doing? You're renting out a hall. What do people do in a hall? They eat dinner. There's nothing wrong with that. You're just making a chasana ba'al suda and the dinner. They just happen to also be doing something there which is prohibited. The rikudim of the dancing. That's not called helping other people to do aveiros. Think of the case in the Gemara where the rabbi is selling the wood for heating and cooking. And you could use that wood for something which was prohibited, but most people use it for something which is permitted. He says, you don't have to worry when you're about to let someone do something that they might use it for an aveiro. That's not the normal thing. Deim lo kein, after the underlining number 60, if that wasn't the case, hailo la'aso milin kol klilai ra'aveira. Are you allowed to sell pots and pans to Jews who don't keep kosher? Why? They're going to take those pots and pans home and they're going to cook on Shabbos. And they're going to cook trade food. So you have to ask everyone who comes into your shop, I'm sorry, if you're not religious, I can't sell you a pot. Says the end of Akazah. Just because they're going to cook on Shabbat, because the main purpose of cooking with pots and pans, the main thing they're going to do is not a prohibition. La asra b'zeh b'shum asai k'sheleika isa delifnei iver. Therefore, that's not a problem for you, since there, it's possible they could do an avera, but it's not definite they're going to do one, and in all likelihood, they're not going to do the avera. Or even if they know they are going to do the avera, even if you know they are going to do the dancing, that's not your problem anymore. And therefore, bottom line, Rav Moshe says to Rav Rakov, that he is allowed to permit this caterer to run the hall, because, as I said, just to recap on the reasons, even though they could get it elsewhere, there should still be a problem of Masayide Ovri Avera, because these people are not on purpose and they're not apostates. Well, surely you have to stop them doing the dancing. And he says no, and he gives two main reasons. Reason number one, because you're really helping them by getting them a kosher function rather than harming them. And reason number two, you're just renting them a hall, like selling them pots and pans for cooking. If they choose to do something in the hall, which is a prohibition, it's not you really that are facilitating that, and therefore he concludes that he allows them to rent out the hall. That's the first tshuva. And I think that's very interesting. We see already in Rav Moshe the thought process that we saw in the sources last week as to how you go through. It's almost like a checklist. Is there, if this, then that, if that, then this, go through them, check off the boxes. So that's the first tshuva, which I think was very interesting. Go over the page, please, now to page 2. At the end of that tshuva, Rav Moshe raises a question which is quite different, which is, if you have clothes which you think have shatness in them, are you allowed to sell them to a Jewish person who is not bothered about them having shatness and will not have them checked? Look at what he says here. Number 2, ubedavar imutzel limkor begadim sheyesh safek im yesh behem shatnas. We think that there may be shatnas in this clothing. We just haven't had it checked yet. The Yisrael she'enu makpid al itza shatnas, to a Jew who will not bother, who will not have it checked. Hine im hu safek mamash. If it's a real question, we really think that there's a chance that it might have shatnas in it. Hainu shematsui, meaning that it's quite common. There is shatnas in these clothes. You are not allowed to sell this clothing to these people because you know that they won't have it checked. It's not good enough that you tell them. Maybe you'll say, well, I'll tell them when they buy it. I'll tell them, oh, you should just make sure you have this checked before you wear it. Since that won't help. If you tell them there's a suffix, kevin the chashudim la'avor, because they don't care. You know they don't care. They'll just nod and say, thank you very much, you know, and say, you know, I'm not doing that. I'm not having it checked. And it'll be fine. So he says, you can't sell it. And even though you're going to tell me they could just go and buy this clothes, you go to Marks and Spencer's down the road and they can buy it from someone else. So you know that there really isn't lifnei iver on a Torah level, because we said, and Rav Moshe says repeatedly, if they can get it somewhere else, that is not a Torah prohibition of lifnei iver. So granted, they could get it somewhere else. Shehu rak issur drabbanon, and therefore we're dealing with the lower level issur drabbanon. Ein lahasif, I'm not going to allow it here. Bazeh mitam sofik lekula, just because you'll say it's a sofik drabbanon, no, he says I'm not going to allow it. Al kopanim asay lahem be'issa drabonim, because you know that you're helping them to do something which is really quite possibly an issa drabonim. Sheboru shiavru al zeh, they'll definitely break it, but they won't have it checked. She'asu b'lo b'dika, because you can't wear these clothes without checking. Yes?
Are you allowed to sell something that you know is shatnas? Is a merchant who carries suits,
whatever. To non-Jews, yes.
To any customer who comes into the store.
That could be a problem. He's saying... I know this clothes, it's even worse. Meaning here, we're talking about a sofek. If you know that the suit has shatnas, and a Jew comes into your store, Rav Moshe Feinstein is saying that there's a real problem selling this suit to the Jew. Ah, he could get it somewhere else. Okay, there's no lifnei iver on the Torah level, but there's a mitzvah masayide ovri avera. And then you're going to have to fall back on the other heterim, which are, oh, well, maybe he's an apostate Jew. Probably not. Maybe he's doing it on purpose. Probably not. What does he know about shatnas? And you can't say, like we said in the last tshuva, well, actually, you're really helping them because you're stopping them from doing something. What are you stopping them from doing? So here he says, no, you can't sell them the suit. Which is interesting, because you might have to actually think twice if you're selling shatnas suits. Is this person from buying from me Jewish? Are they not Jewish? Are they frum? Are they not frum? Obviously, you can sell a shatnas suit to a frum person, because you can say to them, have it checked.
Why can't you
I think it has Shabbos in it. Yes.
Why is a frum Jew allowed to sell non-Shabbos clothing?
You mean Shabbos clothing? Shabbos clothing with Shabbos in it. Why not?
He wouldn't be allowed to sell thread for food.
Why not? To non-Jews? Why not?
Non-Jews.
Why not? A Jew can sell...
Oh, and then he would have to tell every Jew that comes in, this is not...
Yeah. Nachon. Nachon. Meaning there's no prohibition selling Shabbos to non-Jews. There's no problem. Unless you think they're going to sell it on to Jews who don't know, etc., then there's a different question. But generally speaking, if I'm a Jew, if I own a store and I sell suits with Shabbos in them, 99% of my customers are non-Jews, maybe even more. There's no problem with that. The question I'm going to have is, though, the Jews that come in who are not religious, said Rav Moshe, that's a major problem. He says at the end now...
Oxford Street, you recognize which is a Jew, which is not a Jew.
Good Shaila. So you better ask a Shaila about that. Aval, he says, yes.
Don't
sell
food. Yes. How many shops, and I know they used to be in New York many clothing stores, where they had a sign on the way, someone can check the
shop. Well, again, Rav Moshe seems to be saying that won't help you with somebody who's going to ignore the sign. A non-religious Jew who won't even understand the sign or... I don't know. Rav Moshe seems to say, again, I'm not a posek. If you have a clothing store and you sell clothes to people who you're planning on opening one, please ask your local Orthodox rabbi. But it sounds like it's a problem. No, he's saying it won't help. It won't help, because if the person will ignore the sign, and you know the clothes are a problem, and you know the person's not religious, it's a problem. He says at the end, Avalim hu rak chashash ba'alma. If it's not really a suffix, but it's just, maybe the clothes have shatners in them, unlikely. It's an unlikely minority. It's a small minority. And there's a debate in Halacha, what's called a miut she'enu matsui. Is it less than 10%? Is it less than 5%? I'm not getting into that now. But there are clothing which we say to people, it's better to check this. But really, there's a very low chance of it having shatners in it. She'enu matsu, it's not really likely. She'midina yesh lemezel basaruba. You can really, according to the halacha, follow the rove and assume it doesn't have shatners. For rak mishum she'ashli v'ruid, only because we're able to check machmirim levarer, then we machmir to check. There, I'm not so worried, says Rav Moshe. Rashaylim kor af le'elu she'lo yiv. Because there you can sell to even to people who won't check, because really, halachically, there's no problem with this, really. There are many clothes that you buy from stores, and like 100 other people have bought them, and they've never had a problem with it.
Yeah, but European stuff,
there. Okay, you have to know your clothes. Some yes, some no. I've bought lots of things from lots of places. I only once had a problem where the guy checking for it told me that it was completely irreparable. It was the whole thing was shattered through and through, and there was nothing I could do with it, really. Yes.
Not clothing, but yes. I have articles in my home, my textiles. On a sofa, on the bed covering.
Yes.
And there I have the problem of shatner.
Okay, I don't want to give a whole shir on Hilchos Shatner. Where does it yes apply? Where does it applies to bed coverings and clothing. It applies to chairs. And I'm not getting into that now. The truth is, over the last few decades, shatner became less of a problem because people use more and more synthetic fibers. But over recent years, it's become more of a problem again as synthetic fibers have gone out of fashion and people are using more linen again that they didn't used to use. I'm not getting into a whole shiloh about Hilchos Shatners now, but it's interesting, Rav Moshe here said, no, you cannot sell the clothing. That's already a Messiah day over a day. Even though it's not Lifnei Iver, he could get it elsewhere. It is the rabbinic level. Source number three. The last quote we have from Rav Moshe is a very different kind of tshuva. Look at number three. Here he's talking about inviting people for a Shabbaton when you know they're going to drive. And here he's going to say something very unexpected. Bir Issa, okay, I'm going to explain that Issa, Shiyesh v'hazmanat anashim sheyavola hitzpalel b'bet knesset. They're going to come to a shul to daven for Shabbos, because sheyoidin, when you know, sheyavol b'machines. They're going to come in machines. Okay. Fine. This is also a tshuva from 1953. This tshuva is addressed, interesting, Nishalti, number one here, little number one in number three, Meharav Rav Naftali Kalbach from Detroit. This was a cousin of Rav Shlomo Kalbach. Rav Naftali Kalbach lived in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, was a Rav in Detroit. And he gives the tshuva. Im yesh le isra lifnei iver lahazmin anashim sheyavol leitpalel b'shabbos lebeis hakneses. Obviously, he has a shul. Many of his congregants drive. We know that was the case in those years. It still is the case in some shuls. Kushiyodei shechalu al shabbos b'nesiva machines. You know they're going to come to shul. Can you openly invite them? We're having a luncheon. We're having a fundraiser. We're having, well, maybe not on Shabbos. They wouldn't have a fundraiser, but whatever we're having an outreach Shabbos. So Rav Kalbach is asking about Lifnei Iver. He thinks that's what Rav Moshe is going to deal with. Actually, Rav Moshe has a bigger problem than Lifnei Iver. Vishbetidla has min. I want to answer him that to invite these people at a rechaikim, people who live far away. The people who it's impossible for them to come unless they drive. As you know, many people live 5-10 miles away from the shul. There's no way they can walk. It's not even possible. Vaday asur. He said that's completely asur. For who oid garua mi'issa lifnei iver. And actually he says, it's even worse than lifnei iver. Shahari hu oid be'issa mesit. There's an issa of mesit. What is a mesit? Mesid is the someone who entices other Jews to transgress halacha. It's like an enticer or a tempter, etc. It's not just lifnei iver where I'm facilitating, but I'm actively encouraging other people to do averus. He says that's even worse. V'avshe is the mesid l'chiv skila, even though you're going to tell me that the actual stoning capital offense, because lifnei iver is not a capital offense, but mesid is, who rag mesid la'avodah akum, is only for avodah zorah, yes. Mikol makom le'inyan ha'issa, v'ha'enish klapi shamaya, but when it comes to mesid in terms of the responsibility klapi shamaya to heaven, meaning yes, a human court will not be able to prosecute you for being a mesid except for avodah zorah. But the issa itself, says Rav Moshe, is b'chol chomer, and it's all in all its prohibitions, it's all its seriousness. She'ein tonin lemeitis yesh b'chol isurim. That applies to all isurim. So if you go out there and tempt people and encourage people to break Shabbos, you are a meisit. You are basically chayav misa. He says klafei shamaya, which is very serious business. I don't know if Rav Kalbach was expecting that answer. She'ein the meisit yesh b'chol avera. This applies to any avera. So tempt people to do it, encourage them. We only punish in a human court maces for avodah zara, aval bedine shamayim yernash. In terms of shamayim, you're responsible for all avodah if you're a maces. So Rav Moshe is very, very unhappy about encouraging people to drive on Shabbos, even if you think it's going to help, even if you think it's going to do good, because, you know, if they don't drive, then, you know, they're not going to have this experience, this kiruv experience. He says you can't allow someone to be a mesid because you think it's going to be a kiruv experience. Also, by the way, you can't necessarily make the argument that they would have driven anyway, because they might have driven to Walmart, but they wouldn't have made this drive, would they? They wouldn't have driven from there to the shul if you hadn't invited them there. So even in Lifnei Iver, you can't easily turn around and say they could have got it elsewhere. Because don't forget, every time you're in a car on Shabbos pressing the gas or pressing the brakes, that's a new Chilul Shabbos. It's not just one Chilul Shabbos for every single, you know, for driving on Shabbos. Is that a question?
That's how we got to Israel. We didn't want people driving to restaurants by
Mitzvah. Oh, really? You had it in Israel. You see? Don't drive on Shabbos, you may end up living in Israel. Yes. He's still talking about the Rechaikim. Now he's going to deal with the Karovim, the people who live closer. Number two, in box number three. V'issa lifnei iver yesh afta einam Rechaikim. Even the people who are very close by, who could walk, but won't walk, sheyadua sheyitzatzlu, they'll be lazy, okay, leilech b'regalim, and they won't bother coming, they won't come on foot. One of my rabbonim, when I was a kid, in the shul I lived in Leeds, all the cars that were parked around the shul on Shabbos morning, which were clearly Jewish people coming, my grandfather, Alav HaShalom, he used to work for security on Rosh Hashanah. And he used to liaise with the police every year. And the shul had an enormous car park that held about 600 cars. And of course, the doors were locked on Rosh Hashanah, and the cars were double parked all around all the streets, and there were people going crazy, calling the police. And they came up, and the police used to come to my grandfather and say, I don't understand. You have a car park for 600 cars, which is locked on the busiest day of the year. Why are these people not using the car park? They just couldn't get it. And my grandfather said to them, well, they're not meant to drive. So he says, well, if they're not meant to drive, why do they drive? Good question. So he said, one of my Rabbani when I was younger, so he got the caretaker on Shabbos morning to put signs on all the cars, the Jewish park cars. It said PAL, prolong active life, walk to shul on Shabbos. And he had them on all, under all of the windscreen wipers on all of the cars. Okay? I don't know if it helped, but it was a good idea. Okay? So he says, even people who live close by that could walk, but won't walk, so that's not mated. About it's a mated leker be'ena rechaykim. That's not mated because you're not enticing them to break Shabbos because that's their choice really. But it's still is neiva because you know they're going to drive, and therefore he's not even happy for you to invite the people who live around the corner if you know they're going to drive. And then he says ve'im eina b'loshen hazmana, if you don't say it as a direct invitation, please come to shul, but you just make an announcement. There's going to be a Shabbaton. There's going to be a service, and people can make their own mind up. There he says, I don't know, I don't know, maybe that is Lifneva, maybe that's not Lifneva, I mean, how direct does it have to be? He doesn't like it, but he's not sure. So Rav Moshe, therefore, is not going to be someone you can rely on to have your Kiruv Shabbaton when you know that people are going to drive. However, that is still a Shaila, and it's a Shaila with individuals, with relatives as well. Many people have relatives, Bali Tshuva, who have relatives, they want to have their grandparents round for Shabbat, they want to have their parents round for Shabbat, they know the parents will drive. The parents could even live 30 miles away, and there's no choice but for them to drive. So Rav Moshe will say, I'm sorry, you can't have your parents for Shabbos. You're enticing them to drive. Others say, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, look, if you offer them a place to stay, and you're not enticing them, on the contrary, you're telling them, we have a bedroom, please, we want you to stay, we don't want you to drive, so then that's not a problem of Mesid anymore, because you're actually asking them not to drive. And then if they decide to drive, then there's no problem of Mesid. The question is still whether that's Lifnei Iver or not. And it's not so straightforward. There are those who want to argue, Rav Berkowitz always used to argue, that if you really feel that there's going to be a positive potential outcome from that Shabbaton, or that experience, or that Shabbos Ruach, so then you can start with the other argument of, are you actually helping them, or are you not helping them? That's an interesting question. But that won't apply in every situation. Having great Auntie Doris over again for Shabbos, because she lied, but she's not going to become a Baal Tshuva, well, you never know, but probably not from coming to you for Shabbos. But maybe it's different with people who could. Yes?
I once heard an answer that you invite people for Shabbat to drive.
Right.
The time that they're in your home, they're not being Mechalel Shabbat. Which otherwise
they
probably would be.
Okay.
So therefore,
the, you know. That's nice. But I'm not sure that it helps. Rav Moshe, I don't think would say that helps. To be a Mesis, in order to stop them from being Mechalel Shabbos for a few hours, it's problematic. But there are people who want to say that you can if you let them stay. Yes.
There's a Chabad shul in Florida.
Yes.
A beautiful shul where the Rav gets up every Shabbos and says, everyone in this shul walks to shul. Some walk from their home, some walk from the parking lot.
No, okay. That's
he's not asking, he's not enticing them.
Right.
He has a shul.
He has a nice vibe. And I agree, most of the rabbis in the world with shuls where people drive to shul on Shabbat, at the end of the day, this Rav Moshe is not what they're relying on. They're relying on other heterium of this idea that there's net gain and etc. But Rav Moshe is not happy about it. Let's go on because the time is marching forward. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has an interesting shy. Look at number 4. Kibud va'achila v'shtiyah l'mish yodeh shelo yivarech. Giving people food when you know they won't make brochas. Okay, but a kavei masav. Everybody has to think very carefully. L'shem shamayim. Are they l'shem shamayim or they're not l'shem shamayim? You have to examine your motivations through life. That's one of the simanim in Shulchan Aruch. And you have to balance very carefully why you're doing what you're doing. The misha ba'ilav. Someone comes to you, says Rav Shlomo Zalman. Oreach, eizei a guest, chashuv. Asher einenu shomer Torah. He doesn't keep mitzvot. Oh, mitzvot. But he likes religious Jews. He supports yeshivas. He gives money. He likes Jews. He likes Orthodox Jews. He likes Orthodoxy. He supports yeshivas. If the balabait doesn't behave in the appropriate, polite way, Ota, the midi, the micha, the mechel, the mishti, to give him little, a glass of water, a piece of cake. Biglal, on the basis, because really you're not meant to give them any cake, you're not meant to give them any water. Unless if you know that they're not going to wash for bread or to make brachas, and that indeed is what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says, if you know someone is not going to wash, you can't give them a bread roll. Okay? And you can see Rav Shlomo Zalman is very sensitive. He said, even if you very, very politely ask them, would you like to wash for the bread? Would you like to make a brocha? I'll teach you to make a brocha. They'll take it as an insult. He says, I know my customer, says Rav Shlomo Zalman. There are many people in this world, if you ask them to wash, that's the most insulting thing you could ever say to them. Because, you know, you treat me like a child, you know, I make my own decisions. He says, you know, it won't help. It could make them exceedingly angry. You have to really be sensitive. There's also, you know, when people talk about the tinuk shanishba, this whole concept of non-religious Jews may be classified in the sense of a tinuk shanishba, someone who isn't aware of what they're doing, etc. This can be highly insulting to people, especially if they're Israeli. You know, and they speak Hebrew, and you say, you're calling me a tinok? Ani tinok? Ani lo tinok? Ani bochem ha-shenei oseh? You know, you have to be very careful in how you use it. Maybe the religious person thinks they're being very open-minded and broad-minded, calling someone a tinok shenishba. They may actually be insulting them very badly, and they need to be sensitive to that. Your question, yes?
Usually when I have a repairman or something, you know, I don't know. I always offer people water.
Right.
But I offer them water and a yarmulke.
Okay. So you have to know how to do that. Maybe you can do that nicely. They'll put it on. Again, you have to know your customers. Some people are delighted to take a kippah, put it on. Yeah, exactly. A Sam Sfardi, if you offer them a kippah, they'll say, oh, toda, and it's an opportunity. Ashkenazim, you may find your repairs are not done the way that you wanted them done. V'yitachen, it could be, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, shebiglal adavar hazeh, because of the way you treated them, you didn't give them food, yitrachek chas v'shalom b'yoteh me'atorah, they'll become distant from Torah. That's what you've achieved by not giving them a piece of cake. V'gam yavoli de'kas, they'll be angry v'sinah, they'll be hateful, al kol ha'olchim b'derech ha'torah. From now on, they will look at religious people with a negativity. So you have to think about that. So look what he says. Well, that may also, if you ask them to wash and they don't wash, how have you helped them? I says, I think the following. I think you should give them to drink and to eat, even though that goes against the Shulchan Aruch. Apparently goes against the Shulchan Aruch. Don't worry about this neiva. Even though he says, I don't think you can go down the route that we discussed at the beginning of, and justify, I'm doing a little avera to help other people do a big one. He says, that's a dangerous route to go down. It's a dangerous route to go down. Even though in Shulchan Aruch, the case of the girl who was kidnapped on Shabbos, it was allowed. He says, I don't think you can start making those kind of cheshbonos, that I'm going to do averas because I think in net terms it's going to help the world. That's not right. Okay, I'm not getting into all of that now. In our particular case, since the problem that you have, what's your problem giving in the bread roll? That's your problem. He uses the svara, he uses the thought process we saw of the Rav Kiva Eger. If you don't give him to eat, by not giving him the food, you're causing him a bigger problem. You're making him anti-religious, potentially, by not giving him the food. Since the only possible avera that you have is litnei iva, and litnei iva means making it worse for people, if you're making it better for people, where can there be a litnei iva there? There is no avera. It's not that you're doing a little avera to help people do a big mitzvah. What avera is that? The avera of litnei iva is causing people harm. you're only causing people good, even though they're making eating food without bracha. Kevin the leka hacha shum netinat michshol, since you're not causing a michshol, a stumbling block, ela adarabba, on the contrary, yesh kan hatzala mi michshol, you're saving them from a michshol gadol, ma'od, very big, al yidei zeh shehichlif oto bekum ba'asei b'michshol yotekam. Very, very interesting. And of course it reflects from Shlomo Zalman's own very sensitive understanding of the way that people react. And but he said that in Litnei Iver terms, this is not a problem. You are allowed, and not only allowed, but you are obligated to give them the food even though they will not make the brachot. And I'm not sure he'd be so happy to give them a kippah and to ask them. He said, you have to know who you're dealing with. Let's go over the page. The Netziv, we won't be able to read all of the words of all of the tshuvas that we have left, but let's look at one other issue, or two other issues as well. There is a Mishnah in Gittin that we didn't raise last week, which is, can a woman help another woman? If a woman was baking, okay, it would apply equally to a man, but the case given in the Mishnah is a woman who is baking. Well, let's look at it together. Number five, okay? Mish'alet isha l'chavruta, l'chavruta. If a woman is working with another woman who is not religious, can she lend her baking equipment, cooking equipment, if she knows she's going to use it for prohibited purposes? So he says, "Mash'alet isha l'chaverta hachashuda ala shvir." She can lend stuff to her friend who is going to break Shemitah. Nafa, she can lend a sieve, a kavra, and a sifter, a rechaim, a milling machine, a tanur, or an oven. Aval lo tavor, aval lo titachen ima. She can't actually be there, right there with her, helping her right now. She can't cook with her, bake with her, sift with her, because there she's actually assisting this woman to break halacha right there. But she can lend her the equipment in advance. That she can do. Because we don't want to help people do averas. And there, when we said you can lend them the equipment in advance, and you're not responsible if it's in advance, that's only if there's an issue of darche shalom. Because how can I not lend you things? We want to make shalom between the Jewish people. So the Mishnah introduces an interesting principle. That I can lend people equipment even though I know that they're going to use it for averus. Because it's Shemitah year. What could she... It's not like I said before where the catering hall was, they could do a million positive things in the catering hall. Why are you worried about the negative? Here, during Shemitah year, if you're lending out a sifter, what's she going to use it for? There's most of the produce is Shemitah, and she's not allowed to process it that way if she's doing it in the normal way. Nevertheless, he says, if you're not doing it with immediate effects, and there's Darche Shalom, then that's okay. And here the Netziv picks up on this in number 7. Let's look at the Netziv. Shaila imutza lezaveg isha le'isha she yod'im heima la'ovri aveiru v'yavru al isa nida. You are the rabbi, and the non-religious couple has come to you and said, please officiate at our wedding. Give us a blessing so that our marriage should be, you know, Kadash Moshe v'Yisrael, but you know that she's not going to go to the mikveh. This is such a common shaila in Orthodox rabbis all around the world, and has been and still is. Okay? Now, in many cases, okay, in the United Synagogue in London, she has to go to the mikveh, there has to be someone who signs she's been to the mikveh, but that's now. What's going to be next month or next year? The rabbi knows that she's not going to keep this up going forward. Is he allowed to officiate at the wedding and basically endorse this relationship, which is going to continue to be a problem going forward? Look at what he says, little number 2 and 7. Again, the very first thing he says is, if you don't help them, can they get the wedding somewhere else?
Yes.
They'll go to the rabbi down the road. Maybe even the reform rabbi down the road. Okay? So he says, hey, there's no problem of litnei iver mikol makom b'Yisrael. Nevertheless, the second level with a Jew, asur l'saya over avera, you're not allowed to help them do averas. Afilu ba'ofen she'ein b'zeh mishum litnei. Even if litnei iver doesn't apply, you still have this second level of averas. Okay? Just skip to little number 4. He finds a heter here. What is heter? Aval aleinu liyashev rumi d'shtei horas the Tosfos. He's coming back again to this issue of the two Tosfos. The Tosfos in Shabbos that seems to say it is a problem, even when litnei iver doesn't apply, and the Tosfos in Avodah Zarah that seems to say it's not a problem. And we try to resolve this contradiction. We said, maybe this one's an apostate, this one's not an apostate, this one's on purpose, this one's not on purpose. He gives a different distinction here. Look what he says. But Gamma Das knows that Shela Oilam Isla Saide over Avera, Shafiru Chayv Lahavrish and Chavelu Yisrael Meisur. There is a prohibition on the rabbinic level. Mikol Shekain Shela Yaseh Tzia Sheyaseh Avera, all the more so you shouldn't actively help them. He quotes the Binyan Tzion. Okay? Ukvar Kasav Hagol HaMachaber Binyan Tzion. That's from Yaakov Esslinger, who was a very important rav in the early to mid 1800s in Germany. Liyashev Rumi of the Piskei Tosfos. He resolves this problem in Tosfos as follows. De'im hu masaya b'shasha oise avera. If you're helping them right here, right now to do the avera, vadai osa. That's what's osa. Remember the case in Tosfos and Shabbos? There's a Jew standing outside about to carry a cup. We talked about this last week. About to carry a cup from a private domain into a public domain. And you're just standing there in the house holding the cup. And a Jew right in front of you is about to be machal al Shabbos. Their Tosfos says, even though he might be able to get it without you, you have to say, stop, stop, don't do the Avera. You have to intervene. Because the Avera, says the Nativ, is being done right now. Okay? Vadai also b'chol inyin. U'mechuyv la'avrisho im yachol. Masha einkin shalov v'shas Avera. But if the Avera is going to be down the line, ala sha'acha kach hashud shiyase Avera. Remember the other Tosfos? Can you give non-kosher food? Can you sell non-kosher food to an apostate Jew? Well, when is he going to do the Avera of eating the food? Here in the shop? No, down the line, somewhere down the line. An old lady asks you to help her, you know, bring her shopping in and into the house, put it in the fridge, and it's full of trade food. Do you have to say to her, I'm sorry, I can't help you, I can't facilitate you bringing trade food into your house? So he's going to say, no, the Avera is a little bit down the line, and therefore there's a different consideration. Okay? But there ain't asur ela betrei yibra. Now there's only a problem if there's no way they can get it without you. If already there's no lifnei yibra on a daraisa level and we're worried about the rabbinic level prohibition, so he says I'm less worried about the rabbi here because A, the avera is down the line, the avera of nida is not happening right here and right now. B, he said there's a darche shalom issue here. And C, he also brings in at the end, given that it's a rabbinic prohibition and maybe there are tzadim, there are grounds to be lenient, since it's the rabbi's parnosa, he says he doesn't think the rabbi has to stand on this on principle. And again, money is not an excuse for doing averas, but given that we're dealing already, he says, with a different levels of rabbinic avera and suffix, he said the money angle does become important, that you don't have to lose your parnosa rather than to help these people in this way. I want to just mention in the last few minutes, Rav Avadya Yosef. Rav Avadya Yosef, we're not going to read through the tshuva, I'll leave you to read it in your own time. He is dealing with the question of a restaurant, a meaty restaurant that wants to stay open in Israel during the 9 days. And he says if he closes his restaurant during the 9 days, he's going to lose business. People are going to go down to the steakia down the road, and they're going to say, ooh, that's a good steakia, and he's going to lose business. And when he opens again after Tisha B'Av, he's going to find that he has less customers. And Rav Avadya there says some interesting things. First of all, he makes it clear that the issa to eat meat during the 9 days is, at the end of the day, a minhag. He says that's very important, and he'll tell you why it's important in a minute. Then he says that there's no litnei iva on a daraisa level. Why not? Ah, you're serving them meat during the 9 days. If you don't serve them meat, can they get it elsewhere? Of course. So first of all, litnei iva on a daraisa level doesn't apply. However, he says, on the rabbinic level, are you encouraging them to do averas? He brings a very interesting chiddush, which we haven't seen yet, which I need to mention. He says the rabbinic level of tochacha, of encouraging people to do averas, doesn't apply unless the avera is a Torah avera. Now we said that litnei iver does apply. Litnei iver applies across the board, even to giving bad advice. But once you've realized that litnei iver is not a problem, you're dealing with this secondary level, this rabbinic level, he says, there I think that since it's a minhag, not actually a halachic issa, I don't think that you have a rabbinic obligation to give them tochacha, to stop them from doing it, because the level of the prohibition, if you like, is significantly less, and he works through it, and ultimately he says that you're allowed, he gives them a hefet to keep the restaurant open during the 9 days, even though he's selling meat to people. Also, the Sfaradim do have a slightly different approach to the issues of the 9 days. That's a valid point here. But he doesn't say here only for Sfaradim, not for Ashkenazim. Let me just end with a couple of comments on the questions that we asked at the beginning of last time's shir. If you haven't got the sheet, then I'm happy to email it to you if you send me an email. But at the beginning of last week's shir, I gave you a list of 33 scenarios, which are questions of Lifnei Iver. Now, obviously, I'm not going to go through them all now, but now that you've seen how the post can deal with it, now you see, if you like, the checklist. If this then goes to step two, if that then goes to step three, etc., you should begin to be able to put some halachic answers to these questions. For example, let me just throw one out to you. If you're about to cross the street in Tel Aviv on Shabbat afternoon, and there are Jewish drivers all around you, and now crossing, standing at the, assuming that anyone would ever stop for you in Israel if you were about to cross, let's assume that, let's be done the kapsus. And are you allowed to cause a Jewish driver to stop the car so that you can cross the road on Shabbat afternoon? What do you think? I'm not sure you can. Meaning, if you weren't crossing the road, would he be stopping anyway? No. You are causing him to stop. You and you alone are causing him to stop. And therefore, you know, maybe you're causing a Jew to actually mamash be machal Shabbos right there for you. There could be a very serious Lifnei Iver issue. Maybe you'd have to wait till the lights were anyway red, and then run across the road when the lights were anyway red. There are all sorts of things like that that you might need to think about. And the other questions we asked, if as a pharmacist, are you allowed to give out pills that women may be using to induce an abortion in situations that you wouldn't halakhically be allowed to give an abortion? So again, you'll have to go through the kind of analysis. If you don't give them, will they get them anywhere else? What are you achieving by this? Is the other era happening now? Why? Etc. And I'm not obviously paskining any of these quiz questions, but you should be able to put the details together and start thinking about them. Anyway, that I think is a useful exercise. 2 weeks from now, please God, will be the first day of Hanukkah. What I'd like to do on that Wednesday is do a very interesting contemporary halakhic and hashgafic issue on Hanukkah, which is the following. It has become very popular now to have very public Hanukkah lightings, big menorah lightings in the White House, in Downing Street, in front of the town hall, and people stand up there publicly and make brachas on those Hanukkahs. Okay? Is that a public sanctification of Hashem's name in Pirsume Nisa, or is that a public bracha levatola and a complete unexcusable avera, maybe even a breach of the third commandment? Okay? What is going on at these public Hanukkah lightings? Very fascinating. Lots of issues coming into that. Please God, in 2 weeks we're going to talk about that. And next week will be a mystery what you'll get, but you'll get something good. Okay? Let's leave it there.
Thank you very much. Let me just stop this.